Let's open our Bibles to Ezekiel chapter number 40 and begin our look at this final vision given to the prophet Ezekiel. Now, this vision has a date attached to it, and this is what the date says. In the 25th year of our exile, so that'd be Ezekiel's exile, at the beginning of the year, so that's the spring, on the 10th day of the month, in the 14th year after the city was struck down. So we can put all that together, and this is what we know. It would be the 31st or the 32nd year of King Nebuchadnezzar, depending on which system is used. It would be the 25th year of Jehoiakim's exile, because that's when Ezekiel was taken away. It's the 32nd year of Daniel's captivity, and it's the 14th year since Jerusalem was destroyed by the Babylonians. And it's the 10th day of the first month. So that gives us a date of 29 March of 574 BC. Now, that date is important to Jewish people because that's the beginning of Passover season, the date on which the Passover lambs were supposed to be selected so that they could then be butchered on the 14th and Passover begun. Now, these guys are in exile, so they cannot go to the temple. The temple doesn't even exist anymore. It hasn't existed for 14 years. But it is Passover season nonetheless, so it is a time in which the Jewish people would be thinking heavily about their homeland that they are no longer at. And so it's the perfect time for God to let them know there is a potential future. So here we go. On that very day, the hand of He who is was upon me, and He brought me to the city. So Ezekiel says, God came down on me in power. The Holy Spirit grabbed a hold of me, just like He did once before, and He took me to Jerusalem. Now, the last time He was taken to Jerusalem, He was shown bad things that were going to happen. The abandonment of the city by God's holy presence, and then its destruction at His command. This time, He's going to see the potential of it being rebuilt in glory. Now, I want to emphasize here that it is my opinion that what we'll see in these passages between chapter 40 and chapter 48 was never realized in Israeli history. It was something that God gave to Ezekiel to encourage the people to be holy and to live toward so that they could have this great restoration back into the promised land and the rebuilding of the holy city in glory and the temple as well. Unfortunately, when they came back, they did not come back with full faith. They were dragging their feet. They were hesitant. They were fearful. It took them a whole lot longer to rebuild the temple than it should have. And it took them longer to rebuild the city of Jerusalem and reoccupy it than it should have. And so I believe they didn't live up to the possibility of these passages. Now, I do know, I understand, there are a lot of Bible teachers that say this is describing the millennial Jerusalem, the millennial temple. I have a very serious objection to that. And here it is. Jesus Christ died once for sin and then raised in glory as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and there was no longer any need whatsoever for animal sacrifices from that point forward. In fact, the book of Hebrews makes a very big point that none of the animal sacrifices were able to save us. It was the death of Jesus that saves us. And so I don't see any reason why in the millennium, with Jesus the Savior right there in front of everyone at Jerusalem, there'd be any need for animal sacrifices to remind us of his sacrifice, because he's right there. And so I object to the idea of animal sacrifices in the millennium. I also believe that the point here of Ezekiel receiving this is that if they'll just trust God, these things can happen. And unfortunately, they didn't. And so when they came back from their exile, they built a budget temple and a budget city to begin with. And it wasn't until the time of Herod the Great that the temple was renovated to bring it up even close to a standard by which it would be counted as glorious. In fact, in Josephus's accountings of the renovations by Herod, Herod points out that it was not as glorious as it needed to be. And so he wanted to remedy that and also to do the same thing for the city. So we put all that together. And so all of this, I believe, is just potential that was never realized. However, I will note this as we go through it. There are certain aspects that we will see through here that will later be attached to the eternal description of the new heavens and new earth and the new Jerusalem and the river of the water of life and things of that nature. So I think God eventually brings at least parts of this into reality in eternity future. Let's go. Verse number 2. In the visions of God, he brought me to the land of Israel and set me down on a very high mountain, on which was a structure like a city to the south. So he is set down probably just north of the Temple Mount, in a place that in his day would not have had any real residential areas built. It was just to the north of the temple complex. Verse number 3, when he brought me there, behold, there was a man whose appearance was like bronze. So he had a Middle Eastern skin tone that was bronzed. It was well cured in the sunlight. And he had with him a linen cord and a measuring reed in his hand. So measuring instruments that will be used later. And he was standing in the gateway. So here he is. He's probably on the northernmost gate into the temple complex. The man said to me, "Son of man, look with your eyes, hear with your ears, set your heart upon all that I shall show you." So make up your mind to pay attention and memorize all these things. "For you were brought here in order that I might show it to you. Declare all that you see to the house of Israel." So this is God's plan given to Israel to carry out if they'll just do it. Verse number 5. "Behold, there was a wall all around the outside of the temple area. And the length of the measuring reed in the man's hand was 6 cubits, 6 long cubits, each being a cubit and a handbreadth in length." Now that tells us all the measurements here are done in not the 18-inch cubit, but rather the 20.7-inch cubit, the royal cubit that we've talked about in the past. So I've got a chart in front of me here where I'm going to quickly translate or recompute into our English measurements all the things that we see here. So this guy's measuring stick that he's using is basically 10 feet, 4.2 inches. So a little over 10 feet long. So he measured the thickness of the wall, one reed, and the height, one reed. So the wall around the temple complex that we're about to see is just a little over 10 feet thick and high. Verse 6, then he went into the gateway facing east. So the gateway that's facing the Mount of Olives. Going up its steps and measured the threshold of the gate, one reed deep. So this is also a little over 10 feet. And the side rooms, one reed long, one reed broad, so a little over 10 by 10. And the space between the side rooms, 5 cubits. So that would be basically, we've got 8 feet and 7 inches, so about a little over 8.5 feet. The threshold of the gate by the vestibule of the gate of the inner end, one reed. So what we're doing here is we're looking at all the gate accesses to the temple worship complex. And so these are security stations that are being put in place. Verse number 8, then he measured the vestibule of the gateway on the inside, one reed. Again, a little over 10 feet. Then he measured the vestibule of the gateway, 8 cubits. And so that's 13 feet, 9.6 inches. And its jambs, 2 cubits, which would be basically 3.5 feet. The vestibule of the gate was at the inner end, and there were 3 side rooms on either side of the east gate. The 3 were of the same size. The jambs on either side were of the same size. And then he measured the width of the opening of the gateway, 10 cubits. So this is a massive opening, 17 feet, 3 inches. There was a barrier before the side rooms. So in the security checkpoints, coming up into the temple worship area, you've got these little security rooms, and in front of the security room, there's a little barrier that separates the room from the entry hallway. And so, the barrier was 1 cubit on either side. So basically, 1 foot and about 9 inches. The side rooms were 6 cubits in either side, and so that's, again, 10 feet, a little over 10 feet. Then he measured the gate from the ceiling of the one side room to the ceiling of the other, a breadth of 25 cubits. So 25 cubits is going to be 43 feet and an inch and a half. So this is the distance between gates. And then he measured the vestibule, 25 cubits, same sort of size. And around the vestibule of the gateway was the court. And from the front of the gate at the entrance to the front of the inner vestibule of the gate was 50 cubits. So from the eastern gate all the way up to the front of the temple building is 86 feet, 3 inches. And the gateway had windows all around, narrowing inwards toward the side rooms and toward their jambs. And likewise, the vestibule had windows all around inside, and on the jambs were palm trees. So these gateways also have light sources, natural light sources, that allow the light to get down into the rooms where the security personnel stand to check people out as they're coming into the worship area. And the worship area, as you just heard, was pretty good sized. And there's decorations everywhere. And the decorations they use are the same decorations that were used in past temples, or the past temple of Solomon, and that would be palm trees. Verse 17, he brought me into the outer court, and behold, there were chambers and a pavement all around the court. 30 chambers faced the pavement, and the pavement ran along the side of the gates, corresponding to the length of the gates. This was the lower pavement. And then he measured the distance from the inner front of the lower gate to the outer front of the inner court, 100 cubits on the east side and on the north side. So this courtyard is 100 of these long cubits, which would be 172 feet and 6 inches. And this is where all the people are going to be able to gather for worship if they would just build this temple complex. Verse 20. As for the gate that faced toward the north, belonging to the outer court, he measured its length and its breadth. Its side rooms, three on each side, and its jambs and its vestibules were the same size as those of the first gate. Its length was 50 cubits, its breadth 25 cubits, and its windows, its vestibule, its palm trees were the same size as those of the gate that faced toward the east. And by 7 steps, people would go up to it and find its vestibule before them. So it's a repeat of the eastern gate, except this time we're told there are steps that have to rise up to it, perhaps because of the topography coming from the north. And opposite the gate on the north, as on the east, was a gate to the inner court, and he measured from gate to gate 100 cubits. So again, that's 172 and a half feet. Then he led me to the south, and behold, there was a gate on the south. And basically, you see all the exact same information repeated from the north gate entry area. Then we start talking in verse 28 about the inner court, that is, the area immediately around the shrine building. He brought me to the inner court through the south gate. He measured the south gate. It was the same size as the others. Its side rooms, its jambs, its vestibule were the same size as the others. Both it and its vestibules had windows all around. Its length was 50 cubits, its breadth 25 cubits. Vestibules were all around, 25 cubits long, 5 cubits broad. Its vestibules faced the outer court. Palm trees were on its jambs, and its stairway had 8 steps. He brought me to the inner court on the east side, and he measured the gate. It had the same size as the others, and then it describes them all there. Then he, verse 35, he brought me to the north gate, same information. And there was a chamber, verse 38, with its door in the vestibule of the gate, where the burnt offering was to be washed. So this is the first time we hear about animal sacrifices. That was perfectly appropriate prior to the death of Jesus Christ. That was the God-given means of seeking forgiveness, animal sacrifices in the temple. And so there is a place close to the shrine area in the gate system where those animal pieces would be washed before they were burned. Verse 39. In the vestibule of the gate were 2 tables on either side on which the burnt offering, the sin offering, the guilt offering were to be slaughtered. So there's a place right there for where the animals were butchered. And off to the side, on the outside, as one goes up to the entrance of the north gate, were 2 tables. And off to the other side of the vestibule of the gate were 2 tables. 4 tables were on either side of the gate, 8 tables on which to slaughter. And there were 4 tables of hewn stone for the burnt offering, 1.5 cubits long. So they're 2 feet and 7 inches. And that's big enough that you can put a good-sized sheep or even a bull up on there and butcher it and get it prepared for sacrifice. And 1 cubit high, so it's only 1 foot and 8 almost 9 inches tall, and there were, on which the instruments were laid with which the burnt offering, the sacrifices were slaughtered. The hooks, 1 handbreadth long, were fastened all around within, and on the tables the flesh of the offering was to be laid. So this is the preparation area for sacrifices. And I remind you again, I believe this was potential directions for the Jews coming back from Babylon later. They were supposed to build this place exactly according to these dimensions and with this plan, but they didn't. But the idea was they were to reestablish their sacrificial system according to the rules. And I don't believe that will be necessary at all in the Millennial Temple. So I don't believe this is a Millennial Temple. I believe this is a temple that was never built. Verse 44. On the outside of the inner gateway, there were two chambers in the inner court, one on the side of the north gate, facing south, the other on the side of the south, facing north. And he said to me, these chambers that face south is for the priests who have charge of the temple, and the chambers that faces north are for the priests who have charge of the altar. So we know that there's a division of labor among the priests. Some of them are supposed to take care of the temple building itself. Others are supposed to take care of the altar. So they've got different gathering areas for when they're on duty. These are the sons of Zadok, who alone among the sons of Levi may come near to the Lord to minister to him. Now, there's a little historical thing to be noted here. The Zadok line was the only line that was supposed to function as priests after the time of David. And so when the new temple was to be built, that's the only line that was supposed to serve in this temple. When the Maccabees stood up and cleansed the temple and became the heroes in the 2nd century BC, they took charge of the high priesthood for their own family. They were not of the Zadok line. And so even though they were heroic, they chose to put themselves into positions of leadership that they were not supposed to be in. And that is why, at that exact same time, a new group came into existence called the Zadokim. We know them better in the New Testament by the term Sadducee. So they were the objectors to the Maccabees taking over the high priesthood. And so the Maccabees were supported by the Pharisees, and then in opposition were the Sadducees. So this is just another little reminder here to us that God had a specific family line that was supposed to be in charge. In the New Testament period, the Sadducees were in charge of the high priesthood. Unfortunately, the Sadducees had mutated into, for all intents and purposes, a secular philosophy group. They didn't believe in the supernatural anymore. And so we have this real ironic thing that happens, that people that are actually doing the sacrifices and the ones that are in charge of the temple don't even believe in life after death or punishment and rewards or angels or supernatural resurrection from the dead. None of that. It's just a weird situation. But here, in this passage, we're reminded that when this temple is built, it's supposed to have the Zadok line as high priest. Verse 47, he measured the court 100 cubits long and 100 cubits broad, a square. So again, that's 172.5 feet north and south, east and west. And the temple is inside that worship square. And the altar was in front of the temple building. Then he brought me to the vestibule of the temple and measured the jambs of the vestibule, that is the side parts, 5 cubits on either side. So that's 8 feet, 7.5 inches. And the breadth of the gate was 14 cubits. So that's a little bit less than 25 feet. And the breadth, 12 cubits. I missed something here. And the sidewalls of the gate were 3 cubits on either side. And so that's 5 feet, 2.1 inches. The length of the vestibule was 20 cubits and the breadth 12. So 20 cubits is 34.5 feet. 12 cubits is somewhere in the neighborhood of 19, 20 feet, something like that. and the people would go up to it by 10 steps. Something that people miss out about the temples is that they weren't all on the same level. All the aspects of it were not on the same level. They were different levels going up to the shrine building. And so we see them mentioned here as being 10 steps. Other places, we've already seen 8 steps. And there were pillars beside the jambs, one on either side. Now, these pillars in the Solomon Temple would have been Yakin and Boaz. He will establish in strength is what their names mean together. And so here they are in the new temple plans. They're supposed to be put back in place. Chapter 41. Then he brought me to the nave, the worship building, and measured the jambs. On each side, 6 cubits was the breadth of the jambs, and the breadth of the entrance was 10 cubits, and the sidewalls of the entrance were 5 cubits on either side, and he measured the length of the nave, 40 cubits. Now, that's how far or how long the holy place where the priests do their daily work was supposed to be anyway, 40 cubits by 20 cubits. So in this temple, it's going to be 69 feet by 34.5 feet. And then he went into the inner room and measured the jambs of the entrance, 2 cubits, and the entrance, 6 cubits, and the sidewalls of the other side, 7 cubits. And he measured the length of the room. We're now talking about the Holy of Holies, 20 cubits by 20 cubits. And he said to me, "This is the most holy place." So the most holy place is going to be 17.25 feet by 17.25 feet. Well, we've run out of time today. I hope you'll come back tomorrow as we go through some more of what the Israelis were supposed to build as their temple, as Jerusalem, when they came back from Babylonian exile.